Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Tzuvos is Pei Vav. We are on the top of Pei Hei Amud Beis. We're starting with the words Hahu Gavra. We are in the series of case studies, literally cases that are discussed in court. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf is going to say Gabriela Bashmuel. And all this comes off of a Mishnah. We learned back in the Mishnah that there was a line out the door of people who were wanting money from the person who died. There's a creditor, there's a widow, there's a yoresh, there's an inheritor, and they're lining up the door. Each one is demanding that they get that they receive some form of payment. Who gets it? So that was machlokes between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says this is not an area of rachmanus. No rachmanus over here. Din, you go with the strict letter of the law. And the letter of the law is that you go to the yarish. Yarish should be the first one in line. Rabbi Tarfon, interestingly enough, says not necessarily. Under certain circumstances, kol kodem bem zacha bem. Whoever gets there first gets to hold it. So it's a land grab, and if you get there first, so then it's not a land grab. It's not the right term, and you'll see why in just a moment. But it's a grab, and whoever gets there first gets it. That's the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. So a couple things. First of all, who does the halacha side with? So that we saw already debated between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Reish Lakish says unequivocally the halacha falls like Rabbi Akiva, and any judge who judges in accordance with Rabbi Tarfon is guilty of malpractice. That's simply just not right. And Rav Yochanan was more open to the idea of paskin like Rabbi Tarfon, and that was the one sticking point. The other sticking point that we had over the course of the discussion is that even within the sheet of Rabbi Tarfon, meaning it's hard to understand, and you have these three people lined out the door, why in the world is the Yorish not the first one in line? The Yorish is the one who's inheriting. In other words, when the person dies, so then it goes right to, it should go directly to the Yorish. And why is he in line, and why is he, according to Rabbi Tarfon, not going to get first? It's hard to understand. So as we saw already a couple days ago, so for that we had the opinion of Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel say that the only time that this money doesn't go directly to the Yoresh, even according to Rabbi Tarfon, is only when the property is in a Rishus HaRabim. If the property is in a Rishus HaRabim, where there's no kinyan that's made automatically, so then kol hakodem zacha. But if the property is in a home or in their house, so then obviously the Yoresh gets it, even according to Rabbi Tarfon. Okay, and even within that was the sheet of Rav and Shmuel. We also noted that Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish disagree on that point as well, but okay, that was just all by way of a general summary of what we've been talking about. And yesterday's daf, which we got through more than half of it, was dedicated to story after story, incident after incident, where money was owed, money needed to be collected, and a question of who was the one who rightfully could collect the money. We continue now with those stories, with those episodes. We are on the top of Pei Hei Amud Beis, and we're going to now see three stories in a row, which are basically going to be the same idea repeated three times. Hahu Gavra, Deifke Shev Magadisa Detzari Besadina, Bei Rav Meisha. There was a person who deposited seven pearls wrapped up in one sack in the house of Rav Meisha, Bar Berei Rav Yeshua ben Levi. And by the way, he was a grandson of Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Shachiv Rav Meisha, Velo Pakid. Now he dies and he doesn't give instruction. In other words, generally speaking, person dies, so he needs to take care of his affairs. He needs to write some savah, some instruction in terms of what should be done with his estate. And this person who died, so he didn't. Rashi says that he died suddenly. It was unexpected. So he didn't give any instruction. Also coming to Rabbi Ami. So the matter comes in front of Rabbi Ami, and meaning the person wanted to be Tovea the Yorshin. In other words, the person, the owner of the pearls, wanted to come back and collect his pearls. So Amalei Chad Diadina Bei Rabbi Meisha Bar Berei Rabbi Yeshua Malevi Delo Amid. So Rabbi Amid, when considering this case, says as follows. First of all, here's what I know. I know Rabbi Meisha is not wealthy. Okay, that's point number one. So the idea that he has actually pearls in his possession, that's a strange idea. So that's number one. Velo Oika Yav Simana. And not only that, but the owner of the pearl said that I'm going to give you a simon. And the simon is that there were seven tied in one bag together. So based on that, so Rabbi Ami awarded the owner of the pearls his pearls, even though they weren't on his possession, even though they weren't Ramesha's possession, even though Ramesha gave no instruction to his kids that they don't belong to him, and they in fact belong to somebody else. But based on those two pieces of information, the circumstantial evidence that Ramesha is not wealthy, plus the owner of the item gave Simon, so therefore Rabbi Ami awarded it to the owner. So the Gemara says, "V'lo mar nela dola ragel va'ayol v'nafik lahasam va'val ragel da'ayol v'nafik lahasam ema ina shachrina ikbid ifkid v'ihu mechzei chazei." And then the Gemara puts in one clause, and that's the following: let's say this person who's claiming the pearls belong to him. Let's say he's a frequent guest in the house. All the time he's in the house, so he's casing the place. He's looking at, you're right, to what's there, what properties are there, what possessions are there. And so the Gemara says, under those circumstances, the fact now that he identifies the 7 pearls in one bag, so that's not a big deal. That doesn't mean that he's the owner. It just simply means that he's been around the house very often. Story number one. Story number two, which is going to be more or less the same. So there was a person who left a silver cup over in the house of Chasa. Okay, that's a tongue twister. Shachiv Chasa v'lo pocket. So once again, Chasa dies and he doesn't give instruction of what should be done with all of his estate. Also coming to Rav Nachman, and the case comes in front of Rav Nachman. And again, same circumstantial evidence. He's not wealthy, so he's not really holding a silver cup. It should really. It's not his. And furthermore, the owner of it gave a simon. Now over here, it's not perfectly clear to me what exactly the simon was regarding the silver cup. Maybe he said it was silver. I'm not really sure, but he gave a simon that it was his. And again, the Gemara throws in the same clause. And this only, his providing a simon is only going to be good because he doesn't frequent the house. But if he frequents the house, could be that the silver cup really belongs to somebody else, and this person just happens to have been around the house long enough to know that, hey, there's a silver cup over there, and maybe I could just claim it and make it mine. Next, third story. How did Ifkid Tach...
Excuse me, but you notice the heirs never claimed that it was their fathers or whatever.
Right, but they don't know.
No, I'm saying, but they didn't claim that.
Right, okay.
It's just the one side, you know.
Yeah, I understand. Their claim is a chazakah. I mean,
no,
that's...
No, but he has it, but,
right.
But they didn't say that.
See, right. The Gemara gives us a third story, which again is going to be more or less the same. Matachsa, Rashi says, some sort of silk garment. Bei Rav Dimi Achud Rav Safra. Okay, left over in the house of Rav Dimi. Shachar Rav Dimi v'lo pocket. And again, Rav Dimi dies all of a sudden and he does not give instruction. Also, come to Rabbi Abba, Amalu Chad, the Diyadin Be Rav Dimi Delo Amid. So once again, start off with the circumstantial evidence, which is he's not wealthy. So he doesn't have such fine clothing. V'od Hakayav Simana. And furthermore, the owner provided correct simon. V'lo Marnel Delo Ragadai Vanafik Lahasim, V'Ragadai Vanafik Lahasim, Emeinu Shachrin Efkid, V'iyu Mechsei Chasei. Okay, a little bit.
Those three stories. One was.
You're correct, but the Gemara asked that question by a Mishnah when the Mishnah is giving us halacha over here. These are actual cases, so the cases all sound similar, but they were all three separate cases. Hahu de Amar Lahu Nichsai Latovia. Okay, here now, just a little bit more of these episodes. This story over here has the person dying, have the person giving instruction, but the instruction wasn't all that particularly clear. So as he's dying, his instruction was, I want you to give this particular property over to Tovia. Shachiv, so he dies, that's to Tovia. So, and Tovia walks in. I'm Rav Yochanan, Hari Batovia. So Rav Yochanan says, okay. He didn't really give us very clear instruction which Tovia was, but he said Tovia, and here comes Tovia, and good. I'm a Tovia Vasa Rav Tovia. But let's say the following. Let's say he said Tovia, and again, not with perfect clarity in terms of who he was identifying, but the only piece of information that we have right now is that he wants to give this over to Tovia, and meanwhile, in comes Rav Tovia. Okay, so the person that comes in was a rabbi. And so no one called him Tovia. Everyone called him Rav Tovia. So the Tovia Amar le Rav Tovia lo Amar. So okay. So in other words, probably, or the Gemara over here puts it more to the side of most probably. He didn't mean Rav Tovia, because if he meant Rav Tovia, he would have said Rav Tovia. Meaning, even as he's dying, he wouldn't. It's a pchas and kavod. It would be a degradation to just simply refer to the rabbi's Tovia. So he didn't mean him. So he's not going to be awarded the property. Now, how about if they're very close friends and they were very cordial with one another? We find throughout the Gemara, let's say, for example, you see when the colleagues speak to Rabbi Akiva, so they call him Akiva, and they leave out the word Rabbi. So let's say they had a very good relationship, so the Gemara says, okay. So then, in this particular case, so then it could be that he meant him, even though he said only Tovya. Asu Shnei Tovya, Shachim V'tam L'Chacham. So now, let's say his instruction again, very minimalist instruction, give the property to Tovya, and he wasn't clear, and in comes two Tovyas, and one of them is a neighbor, and the other is a Tam L'Chacham. So Shachim V'tam L'Chacham, Tam L'Chacham. Kodem. So the Tam HaChacham comes first, meaning that, again, it's an umdana. So we're going to have to project in terms of which one he meant, and we don't know. And so the likelihood is that he meant the Tam HaChacham before he meant the Shachin. Okay. Kara of the Tam HaChacham. So let's say one Tovia is a relative and the other one's a Tam HaChacham. So Tam HaChacham Kodem. So the Gemara says, okay, so again, relatives are wonderful, don't get me wrong, but in other words, most probably he meant the Tam HaChacham. Ibai Lehu, Shachin V'Kara of Mai. Okay, so now we are going to put the, this is like seeding in a tournament. So now we're going to take the Shachin and the Karov. They were the two losers to the Tam HaChacham. So we know they're not a one seed. So now, you'll forgive me for the sports analogy. But so we know they're not a one seed. So now, Shachin V'Kara of Mai. So now we're going to put them side by side. So again, his instruction was really minimalist. He said, Tovya. And here comes in two Tovyas. One's a relative and the other is a neighbor. So my Tashma Tov Shachin Karov Me'ach Rachok. A Shachin is better than a neighbor is better than a relative. Okay, right, correct. In other words, whenever you fill out the emergency contact information, so in other words, I could put my relatives who live up north, or you know, put a neighbor. I'll always put a neighbor down. Okay, don't repeat that to my relatives. Anyway, shneim krovim, shneim shcheinim, shneim chachamim. So let's say they were both relatives, they were both neighbors, and they were both chachamim. Shuda d'dayna. So now, what do we have? We know that he wanted to give his estate to Tovya. In comes two Tovyas. And for every measurable, they're equal with one another. So now what do the judges do? So the Gemara says, Shuda Dedaina. Take a look at Rashi. So Rashi says, He talta dayanim lefi mashiru dayanim, sheyadarko shamez lekarivet zeh, yosem izeh. Oma shebishneim tov, noig bederech yishari, sheishlom arbon, iskavein ames lezakos. So if all measurables are equal, so we have really nothing to work with in terms of identifying. So the way Rashi explains the Gemara of Shuda Dedaina, so now the judges are going to have to make a call. Okay, it's a close call, but like in other words, than like any game where the referee has to make the call. So here the judges are going to have to make the call, and what are they going to use to make the call? So Rashi says what they're going to use is nothing empirical, but basically intuition. Rashi says. He talta dayan lefi mashe yiru dayan shai darko shamitz lekari vitzeh yos mizeh. Meaning, using whatever circumstantial evidence they can, like who do you think that person was closer with? This Tovya or that Tovya? Even though on paper they're the same. Omisha b'shneim tov v'noeg b'derech yashar sheyesh lomar bonus kaven ames. Or Rashi said, or let's say which one conducts himself better, meaning who do you think the mace would have been more likely to have given the property over to? Okay.
Three judges?
I don't know. So why not split it? Because he meant, in other words, we know this, he meant one of them. So, and if you want another understanding of Shuda Dedaina, take a look at Tosos. Tosos gives a different explanation of what exactly Shuda Dedaina means. But okay, that ends that discussion in the Gemara. So, let's go on. Okay. Amalei Ravala Berei Derav Chia Bar Avin. Okay. We're going to now switch gears in the Gemara. Okay, as we're approaching now today's daf, we are going to move in the discussion in the Gemara to halachas of Mechila. You'll see what I mean in just a moment. So, Rava says to Rabbi Abba Ta'im Alach Milsa Mal Yosef Amar Avucha. Look, say, could you say something over the name of your father? Your father had such a wonderful Torah to say over, so say something over in his name. So, Hadamr Shmuel, so when I say over Torah, I don't mean like Vortlach or Divrei Torah, meaning like Halacha. So, he says, look, you know Shmuel has this statement. We see the statement to Shmuel through Hashas, and that is the following. So, let's say I have a note, and I sell my note. So Phil now is the happy purchaser of the note that that I sold him. Okay, it's the right. It's the bond market, basically. Okay, so in other words, so I have a note and I sell the note. Okay, paper sold all the time. It's not unusual. However, if you have never heard this Gemara before, so you will be surprised of the statement of Shmuel. Although those of you who have been long in the daf long enough, you know he's made this statement numerous times throughout Shas. So let's say I sell the paper over to Phil. So it's a note that somebody owes me money, but I sell it over to Phil. So now Phil has the buyer of the paper. So now he can collect that. He can collect that obligation. If, however, I forgive the note, I forgive the loan, so that forgiveness stands, and therefore Phil no longer is able to collect that loan.
But he paid you loans.
So he paid back.
That's accurate information. Uh-huh. That's correct. That's correct. Now the question. There are two questions over here. We're going to first deal with the most basic question, and that is what gives me the right to do so. Since I sold the paper, I'm no longer the owner of the paper, and how can I still be mochel? And then the secondary issue, which Danny, we're going to discuss later, which I know it should bother you. It's the obvious issue, and that is that's unethical what I did. In other words, when I sold him the paper, obviously he thought he was buying a collectible. Right. In other words, he was purchasing a receivable, and now Phil paid me good money and he's no longer going to be able to collect. How does that work? Meaning what kind of liability do I have in terms of behaving that way? But let's start off first things first. In other words, by what right do I have to do that? Well, I'll come back to the question in just a moment, but let's first finish the sentence of the Gemara. So we have the halacha that if I sell a note that somebody owes me money and I sell it over to Phil and I forgive the note's forgiven. So, we're going to go one step further. Not only can I forgive the loan, but let's say I have a yoresh. Okay, so I know the way I set up the case, I'm going to meet my demise. But so it's obviously unpleasant to think about. But then if I die and I have a child, and the child now also has the ability to be mochel. Because what happens to all my receivables as I die? So what happens to them is that they go to the next generation. So the next generation who now is inheriting the receivable, so again, what receivable are they inheriting? I sold it. But nevertheless, we're going to go even one step further. Not only can I forgive the loan, but even my Yorshin, who are going to be Yoresh, my ability to forgive, so they also have that ability to forgive as well.
Isn't that a document by the loan?
You're holding the document.
Yeah,
I understand.
So what are the Yoshin? What are they getting?
What are they getting?
The document.
Correct. We'll explain in just a moment. So Modishmu, I'm sorry. So Machla Machla Vafil Yosh Mocha. Okay. However, all that is true within the statement of Shmuel. And again, I'm going to come back and I'm going to explain Shmuel hopefully a little bit better. But Mo de Shmuel. But here's an area where Shmuel will concede. And that is the following. Let's say a woman goes into a marriage and she brings in not property and not assets, but paper. She brings paper into the marriage. She's got bonds, and she brings the bonds into the marriage. Now, again, what do we know? We know the halacha is that anything she brings into the marriage, not as nechsei tzoron barzel, but rather as nechsei malot, is still hers, but the husband has rights to that. The husband's right to that, we saw this just a couple days ago, we're going to see it again. His rights to him give him a holding on those assets. And what did we say earlier, and what we're about to see right now again, is yado ki yada. His holding on those assets make him like a partner on those assets. Now, it's not the classic partnership where he actually has shares in the matter. As we know, he doesn't. She's still the rightful owner of those items. But nevertheless, his peiros, his ability to collect peiros, makes him a holder on that asset. And so therefore, so now because he becomes a holder, she cannot forgive the loan. Because his hand is like her hand, meaning he has a hold now on that paper. And so therefore, she is not the sole proprietor of that paper. He now is also a holder of that paper, so to say. His hand is just as strong as her hand on that piece of paper, and so therefore she no longer has the ability to be mochel that debt. Okay, first thing, just one second. Let's give me a moment. Let it breathe. So the first things first, and that is by what right can the seller? In other words, let's go back to the original case. So I am the holder of a note, and I sell it over to Phil, and I can be mocha, and I can waive that obligation. I can forgive that obligation. By what right can I do so? So this is the traditional explanation, and this explanation goes back to the Rishonim already. Rabbeinu Tam, not here on the daf, but Rabbeinu Tam is quoted as saying as follows: when somebody owes me money, so that him owing me the money really represents itself in one of two ways. Number one, I am the malveh, I'm the lender. Good. So in other words, he has an obligation to me, meaning me being the lender. We contracted that I'm going to lend the money, I'm going to give money, now he's going to owe me. So number one, he owes me. Number two is that on top of that, there's also a shibud. In other words, that shibud means that in the event that he's unable to collect from me, so what's going to now happen is that he can go after my assets, he can go after my property. Good. So there is a shibud haguf. There is a, on one hand, there's me. And number two, the shibud nechasim. And those, not only that, but the borrower can, I'm sorry, the lender can also go after the property as well, if necessary. What Shmuel's really teaching us, this is again, the traditional and classic explanation of Shmuel's halacha. When I'm selling a note to somebody else, the only thing I'm selling is shibud nechasim. I cannot sell shibud haguf. And that means as follows, is that when I'm selling the note, so what I'm really doing is I'm saying, Phil, here, you have the right now to collect this loan. But you're not the lender. I never relinquish my title as the lender. I'm giving him the right to collect. In other words, he now has Shiba Nechasim. He has a right to collect, but I still retain the name of being the lender. Therefore, says Shmuel, being that I'm still the lender, if I want to, I could be mochel. That's a traditional way of explaining Shmuel. Okay. Then, this shame, this shibud haguf, this name of the lender, is transferable over to the next generation. I mean, that's the next part of the Gemara. Meaning that now when I become the lender, so, and if I die, so my children now have that shibud haguf, because as a yarish, they're me. In other words, they take my place. So they also can forgive the loan as well. Okay, so that's the traditional explanation of how Shmuel's halacha works. With that stated, we go on in the Gemara. We're now two lines from the bottom of the Amud. Now again, Danny, I didn't forget. In other words, we're going to come back to the discussion of what liability do I have for doing that? Because again, I got paid for that note. And now I'm going to forgive it. That's not right. Stay tuned, we're going to come back to that question in a moment. Krav to the Rav Nachman's Vinti L'Ksuvasa B'Tovas Hana. A relative of Rav Nachman sold her Ksuva, and she sold it for a little bit of money. Meaning, let's think about the value of a Ksuva. Okay, as a piece of paper. How valuable is it? Well, it's pretty good. In other words, upon death or divorce, she's going to collect 200 zuz. And if there's anything else written into the ksuva, that she collects that as well. So on one hand, the value of that paper is pretty good. On the other hand, it's not happening today or tomorrow, it's the future. And also there's a risk involved in that it never may be collected. So when you look at that piece of paper, because again, let me just spell it out. Because if she dies before he does, so then there's nothing to collect. The ksuva is only collectible only if he dies or if they get a divorce. So that all has to be, just one second, that all has to be factored into the it has to be factored into the sale. Meaning, obviously, when you appraise something, you have to take all the risk into consideration, and so that obviously goes into it. So if she wants to sell her ksuva, meaning it's a paper, it's a note, she could sell it. If she's going to sell her ksuva, so what she has to do is, I mean, so she'll sell it for whatever anyone puts a value on it. So it's 200 zuz, but at the same time, who wants to buy it? It's a risk. It's not going to be collected tomorrow, today or tomorrow. It's a future. And two, it may never be collected. So whatever it was worth, she sold it. Good. So she sold her ksuva. Now, the relative of Nachman comes, Zvinti ksuva betovas ana, Eger shev shchiva. So what happens is as follows. So she got a divorce. So now the ksuva node becomes a collectible. It's a receivable. Okay? And then the woman dies. So now, but she sold the note. She sold the ksuva. And so the buyer of the ksuva is still hoping now, not hoping, rightfully entitled to collect the ksuva. Also, katavale levarta. So what happened was, is that the buyer of the ksuva goes to the daughter. Now, the truth of the matter is that that's not really the first person he should be going to. In other words, the buyer of the ksuva should be going to the husband, right? Good. So, the conclusion is going to be the same. So, but yes, admittedly, it's a little bit strange that the buyer of the ksuva first goes to the husband. To the daughter. Amlu Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, now again, this is a relative of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman knows halacha, and he knows halacha very well. So he says, Leika delis belei etza. No one can give her the following advice, meaning he's kind of like throwing out the question in the air, and like she's going to hear the advice. And the advice goes like this. Tezel, let her go. V'tichla l'ksuvasa de'ima, and let her forgive the ksuva of the mother. Legabe avua, as it relates to the father. V'tirsa minei, and then ultimately she'll go and inherit that asset. Let's think about this. What is the daughter? The daughter is the yoresh of the mother. In other words, remember, the mother divorced. So that means that there was no husband. So that when the mother dies, so the daughter now inherits all that estate. What else does the daughter inherit? She also now is the owner of the ksuva. Now remember, the ksuva was sold off. But remember what we said earlier. When the ksuva sold off, the shibud nechasim was sold off. The shibud aguf still retains by the mother. So when the mother dies, the shibud aguf goes to the daughter. So the daughter has the right to be mochel. And now when she's mochel, what does that mean? That means that her father's estate is going to be holding that money. Because a father's estate doesn't have to pay the ksuva that money. Now what? Now, if and when the father dies, she's going to inherit that asset. That was Rav Nachman's advice to his relative.
She's also taking a risk here. Her risk is that she would die before the father.
Okay.
Or it would take a long time for her to give the money.
Agreed. But that's better than having lost.
Yeah, but she's still taking the risk.
Okay. Agreed. So Tezav Tichlik Suvasa Dima Lagabi Avua Vitirsaminai Shama Zazla. So she heard the advice, meaning Rav Nachman didn't directly give her the advice, but Rav Nachman said in a way where it was going to be communicated to his relative. Azla Achilto. So she went and she forgave the ksuva. Amar Rav Nachman Asina Asmini Korachei Dayanim. Now this should sound familiar because the same exact Gemara, meaning line for line, not the case, but right, but the idea that I conducted myself like a lawyer and I felt terrible. So we had that by Rav Yochanan earlier in the Masechta. So here we are now on Daf Pei Vav, and we get to see it again with Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, I feel terrible because now what am I like? No offense to the attorneys out there, but I'm like a lawyer. Me, now, originally he thought it was a good idea to advise his relative, and then afterwards he thought, I shouldn't have done that. Where do we start and where do we end with his thought process? Me, so originally he thought, look, it's relative, it's mishpacha. Don't cover your eyes from your relatives. Your relatives need you, so you should be there for them. And if that means give them a good advice, so give them good advice. So that's a starting point of why he advised his family member. But then he said afterwards, look, I'm Rav Nachman. I shouldn't be doing this. Now the way Rashi understands this, what Rav Nachman is bemoaning is the idea that I wasn't wrong. Meaning, if you have a family member and they need your help, so you should help them. And you should give them good advice. But the problem is, however, is that because I'm Rav Nachman, so people will think, oh, you know, you should always advise others. In other words, in any type of any type of judicial process where you can advise them and give them good litigation advice, so you should do so. And the way Rashi understands it, that's just not good. Meaning, not good to go around and start, you know, helping others, you know, beat the system, find the loophole, etc., etc.
We had a case yesterday, three cases, I think. One of them, I remember, Raf, his daughter, and he was not known as a good one. The same idea, basically, saying.
Yep.
And they did it.
Yep. Okay. Gufa Amar Shmuel Amoch Yishachov L'chaver V'chazer Machlo Machlo V'afilu Yarish Mocha. Okay, so we're going to go over the halach of Shmuel, which is that when you sell a note, so you can still forgive the note, and even the Yorish has the ability to forgive the note, the Yorish of the seller. Amar Ravuna Bar Dar Yeshua, v'ipikechu, mekakesh le'zuvitz v'kakeh le'shtar b'shmei. Can Phil do anything to protect himself? So the Gemara now turns to that, and that is, yeah, Phil could do something to protect himself. Ipikechu, if he's smart, which in this case it works out, because he is. So mekakesh le'zuvitz, so what he should do is he should dangle a little bit of money in front of the borrower and tell the borrower, let's do the following. Kasev le'shtar b'shmei. Go write a shtar in my name. Now, exactly what this means is not perfectly clear, and Rashi does not give a whole lot of information over here. Mekarkish le'zutzi, take a look at Rashi. So what you should do is, you should write a document having now Phil's name being the lender. Kodem shiasu kenunya min shneihem. Before the borrower and the original lender get together and make some sort of devious plan. So in other words, basically you should put your name on the note.
But the thing is, the borrower is not going to have two shtar sitting out there.
Now, does this mean rip up the old note and write? This is the part I'm unclear about. I'm going to be honest. Does that mean rip up the old note and write a whole new note? That's a little bit difficult because you're going to lose you're going to lose the date of the original note. Does it mean writing an addendum to the original note? I'm not sure if that's what it means as well. I'm admitting I'm not perfectly clear what exactly this means in terms of having his name attached to it, but I understand the basic idea. Just practically, I don't know how this plays out. Amar Meimar. And we get to the end of this discussion now, and that is with the following. Okay, what I did was not right. I think we can all agree. In other words, I have a note. I sold it over to Phil. I collect money for the sale of that note. And now what I did is I forgive the loan. So again, we explain how I could do that, meaning by what right I could do that. But even though I have the right to do that, it's not right. I got money for that. Phil was expecting to buy a receivable. And now he's not going to collect? That makes me wrong. Now when we say it makes me wrong, so now we speak about liability. I'm a mazik. Yes or no?
Grumman.
Right. In other words, Goslin also. Okay. I'm a mazik. In other words, what I did is that I impaired. I damaged the document, but not physically damaged it. I legally damaged it. I impaired Phil's ability to collect with that document. So that was what's called a mazik. But not in the classic sense. The classic sense of mazik is when I take my car and back it up into your car. And I do physical damage to your car. Or if I hit you and I do physical damage to you. That's hezek. Over here, illegal damage is not mazik biyadayim. I'm not physically damaging with my hands. So it's... Now, there's a term that's used in the Gemara in Gittin, which the Gemara here doesn't use, which is hezek sheino nidkar, right? It's damages that's not recognizable. There's no physical change that occurred. It's a legal change that occurred. Or, I'm going to use the Gemara's terminology over here, which is kind of better because we're learning the Gemara in Daf Pei Vav in Ksuvos, and that is it's gurama, meaning there's a causality between what I did and the damage that occurred. And, not to use the word gurama, but to use a more specific word, and that's garmi. Meaning, if there's a causality, and it's pretty clear what the causality is. Meaning, I forgave the loan, and now Phil can no longer collect. So what I did had an immediate impact, although I didn't physically damage the paper, it had an immediate impact. So this is what's called garmi. So is garmi something which it's damage, but is it something where Beis Din can enforce and hold you liable for such damages? And this is an age-old debate throughout the Gemara. So Amemar says, look, if you're the kind of court that assesses this kind of damage, so, good. So in other words, so what I did now is I caused a loss to Phil. So if Phil took me to court, I would have to reimburse him for the amount of the document. And the one who doesn't judge these kinds of cases, meaning again, it's a tried and true, old-fashioned machlokas. And if you're the kind of court that doesn't assess these kinds of damages, so then what do I pay Phil? Phil, I'm really sorry for that loss of paper. Okay. Meaning that paper, and as Rashi points out, by the way, makes it even funnier, I don't even have to reimburse you for the paper because you're holding the paper in your hand. Okay, fine. But you know what? It's a piece of paper. It's a piece of paper. Okay, in other words, but there was no actual physical damage that was done. So if you don't assess Garmi, so then, again, obviously, by the way, there's the ill effect of what I did is my reputation. Meaning, obviously, not that Phil's going to go and spread Lashon Hara, but obviously my sterling reputation won't be so sterling anymore. If I start selling these kinds of notes and then forgiving them, so then obviously there's that. But in terms of an actual assessment for liability, again, it's Garmi, and for the courts who don't judge Garmi, I'm not going to have to pay. Gemara tells a story. There was an episode, and Raphram forced Rav Ashi, meaning it's kind of I don't fully get the dynamic over here. Meaning Rav Ashi was the judge, and Raphram said, You may be teetering somewhere in the middle of this issue, but here's what you need to do. You need to collect on that. Meaning that's a liability, that's garmi, you need to collect. And Agbebe Kishur Latsame, and he assessed as much of a beam as a beam for art. If you don't understand what that means, neither do I. Read Rashi. Rashi describes how when they sold beams, sometimes they were painting pictures on the beams, and so therefore those beams were assessed for its precise value. The point is very simple. In other words, it's an assessment. I caused a loss for Phil, and so the matter came in front of Rav Ashi, and he said, you have to pay. Amar Amemar Mishmei de Rav Chama. Hai Mandi Ikala Ksivasisha Bachov Islay Arav Islay Zuze. Okay, we go back to our Mishnah, and we wrap up now the discussion within our Mishnah, and that is the following. Amemar says in the name of Rav Chama that let's say a person has a Ksivasisha Bachov. Okay, so I have a line out the door. It's not a long line, right? There's a balchov, there's a creditor, there's a widow, or in this case, let's call her a divorcee. Let's keep me alive on this one. Vesle ar vesle zuze. And I got land and I got money. So the balchov mesakin le bezuze, lisha mesakin le ba'ara. So for the balchov, I pay him with money. And as Rashi explains, it's very simple. Because when he lent me money. So the expectation was that he was going to get paid back in money. When it comes to the woman, I married her. She didn't give me anything. Shibli. In other words, all that we created was a shibud on the property. So upon divorce, so I give her property. Hai kidina v'hai kidina. Good. And everything fits. V'ilo ika elachad arav alochaz yal alochad. So let's say now that the line at the door is the woman and the balchov, and I only have one property, and it can only satisfy one of the obligations. So who gets it? L'balchov yavin alei, li shalo yavin alei. So give it to the balchov, don't give it to the woman. My time, yosemi, masha ishrotz elisa, ishrotz elina say. Because even though the woman's going to be suffering a loss over here, but that won't prevent women from getting married. Meaning, even though, remember how sensitive we were throughout the Masechta, make sure that the women get paid their ksuva. But in this particular scenario, just because she won't get paid, just because you're going to put the balchov in front of her in the line of collection, that's not going to be preventative. Rashi makes an obvious point over here, but let's say it out, and that is, this only is going to be a dilemma, a conflict, if the dates of both of these notes are the same day. Obviously, if let's say her ksuva predates his balchov, his note, obviously she comes first. So this only becomes an issue of determining which one comes first in line if only they're coming with paper and the dates of both of them are the same. Otherwise, whoever has an earlier date is the first one in line. Amalei Rav Papa Rav Chama Vaday De Amrisa Mishmei De Rava. Rav Papa says to Rav Chama, I'm curious. Rashi explains that this is really a question. Vaday De Amrisa Mishmei De Rava. Is it true what they said in the name of Rava, which is Haiman Damaske Bezuzei Visle Ar Visle Balchov? Let's say a person owes money, and he has land. And the balchov comes, the katava mine, and the balchov says, "Okay, nu, let's go pay." The amr le zilshko me'ara, and the borrower says, "I got no money. I'm defaulting on my loan, but here's property. You go take the property." Amrinan le zilzab and at the isa havle. Do we tell the borrower not unsatisfactory? You're going to go sell the property, you'll recoup the value of that property, and then you'll pay back the lender with money. Did Rava say that? Amar le, lo. Okay, so he said no. Rava never said that. Meaning, and this works out just, you know, in the same, in a similar fashion when, you know, when with loans in this country. Meaning, what happens is that if you default on a loan, so the bank doesn't tell you to sell the property, the bank assumes ownership of the property, the bank will sell the property. So, similarly, that's the halacha. Meaning the halacha is that when a lender lends money and the borrower defaults, so the lender assumes the ownership of the property. And it is not the responsibility of the borrower to go ahead and to sell the property. So Amar lo lo, Emali gufadu of dehecha hava. Yeah, but I heard something in the name of Rava. So could you tell me what happened so I understand? Amar le tol ma'osab ove kochavim hava. So he says, oh, the case of Rava was a very specific case. The lender went over to the borrower and the lender said to the borrower, okay, it's time to pay. The borrower said, look, I know you're looking at a lot of money in my house right now, but that money doesn't belong to me. It belongs to my neighbor. It's not my money. He was lying. The borrower demonstrated chutzpah, and so therefore, Rava said in this particular case, he said to the borrower, you passed off your money as not being yours, you defaulted on the loan, you told them to collect the property, you know what, in this particular case, because you were so chutzpahdik and because you lied, so you're the one who's going to be responsible to sell the property, recoup its value, and pay back the lender. But generally speaking, it's the lender's responsibility. So another dialogue between Rav Kahana and Rav Papa. You know, paying back a debt is a mitzvah. Where in the Torah does it say that one must pay back his debt? So Rashi over here quotes the pasuk, right? Hin Tzedek, right? The pasuk says that when you make your measurements, you weigh the measurements, make sure they're fair. And the Gemara in Baba Metzia says, not only should your weights and measurements be fair, but your hain should be correct. Meaning when you say yes, make sure your yes means yes. And when you say no, make sure your no says no. And so when you say you're going to pay back a loan, you got to keep your word. So it's a mitzvah too when you owe money to pay back your loan. So Amar lo nichali davin mitzvah amai. So let's say the person says, oh really, I don't want to do a mitzvah. Now, mind you, by the way, it's not your, it is your mitzvah, but it also, yeah, correct. Right, correct. I'm just going to, right, today I'm going to be lenient. I won't avail myself to this particular mitzvah. So my, so I'm a light tanina. So he says, oh, that, we have a brisa that speaks about that. When is it true? We're in the middle of a sentence. Rashi gives us a context. Meaning, when do the Beis Din have to stop at 40 lashes. Now, of course, we know 40 means 39, but when do they have to stop? That's Bemed Varmamor, B'mitzvah Slo Saseh. That's when you're in violation of a negative prohibition. However, Ava B'mitzvah Saseh, Kigon, Shomrim Lo, Aseh Sukaveno, Aseh Lulaveno, Aseh. However, if, let's say there is a, let's say their Sukkot is coming up, and Shlich Beis Din says, okay, it's Sukkot, it's time to build a Sukkah. Mitzvah Saseh. And he says, no, thank you. I'm not interested. Or lulav. So makin oso ad shetetz nafsho. So there is no limit in terms of the number of makas that you can get. Makin oso ad shetetz nafsho. Now literally, of course, that means you beat him until he's gone. Until his soul departs. But as we know, Rashi over here writes, the top Rashi in the next Amud, Kodim Sha'avar al Ha'esei V'yesh B'yad Dolekayim. It just means as long as there's opportunity. In other words, as long as there's opportunity to do the mitzvah, so beat him. So by Lulav and Sukkah, so we know the beatings will come to an end. One of two points. Either when he builds a Sukkah, or Sukkah comes and goes. But when the Priyas Chov, however, okay. So now, in other words, the answer is, you cannot avail yourself to the choice of, hey, I don't want to do this particular mitzvah. It's a mitzvah sesa, it's a positive commandment, you do it. Okay. One more discussion to have until we get to the Mishnah. Let's get to the next Mishnah, and then we will pause for the day. Rami Bar Chama asks the following question from Rav Chisda. Let's say a man goes over to his wife and says, this is your get. However, I don't want the get to be effective until 30 days from now. Okay, so he puts a delay. Once again, in all kinyanim, you could do that. We've discussed this earlier. In fact, not that long ago. We discussed putting a delay in a kinyan. So he puts a delay in the get. And then what he did is he took the get and he put it not in a Rishus Rabbim, but on the side of the Rishus Rabbim. Okay, an analogy, maybe not the best analogy, but a sidewalk. Okay, but not the Rishus Rabbim itself. So the Rashi over here, by as long as we're learning the daf, Rashi over here describes Sidur Rishus Rabbi means that area right up against the wall. People, generally speaking, don't walk right up against the wall in a Rishus Rabbim. They're going to scrape themselves, scratch themselves against the walls. So Rashi describes it as the area right up against the wall. Okay.
He did it, not he.
Now, what's important over here, and there's very little Rashi on this whole discussion, what's important over here is that the get was there 30 days from now. Meaning that he gives her the get, she puts it down, Sidur Rishus HaRabim, the get's not going to be effective until 30 days from now, and 30 days from now, the get has to be within Sidur Rishus HaRabim. So, the question is a very simple one, can your Sidur Rishus HaRabim be an area where you can make a kinyan? We know Rishus HaRabim, no. Rishus HaRabim, you cannot make a kinyan. That's if she stands there.
Right?
That's if she's standing there. Correct. So Amar Leinu Megarashes Midravishmol Dravishmol Dami Tabayvu Shitzipurim Menachem Rishus HaRabim. So if it's either Rishus HaRabim or Rishus HaRabim Dami. So the Gemara presents an argument. We know that Rav Shmuel said at the very beginning of this entire sugya that. That according to Rabbi Tarfon, if the assets are in the Rishus HaRabim, it doesn't automatically go to the Aresh, which means that Rishus HaRabim is not an area where it can make a kinyan. And neither is Sidur Rishus HaRabim. It's an assumption. Mm. And we made a small leap. If you can't make a kinyan in Rishus HaRabim, you can't make one in Sidur Rishus HaRabim as well. Good. Adraba, the Gemara says, I can make another argument. Migureshes midrav Nachman, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rava Barav Omer Lachaver Meshoch Parazev Lotia Kenuya Lachad Lacher Shloshim Yom. We're going to go over a halacha that we saw a couple days ago, which is that you pull on the cow, and even though you're doing the Maisa Kenya now, but the Kenya is not going to be effective for another 30 days from now. Kana, you acquired 30 days from now Ve'afilo Amedes Ba'agam, and even though 30 days from now the cow is sitting in a swamp. So my love, Hainu Agam, Hainu Rishus HaRabim. I'm sorry, Hainu Tzidah Rishus HaRabim. So can't we say that the Agam and the Tzidah Rishus HaRabim are basically status-wise the same type of area? And just like you can make a kinyan on an Agam, you can also make one on Tzidah Rishus HaRabim. Lo, Agam Lechud Tzidah Rishus HaRabim Lechud. And the Gemara says no. Agam is a more private area where you can make a kinyan Tzidah Rishus HaRabim, a more public one. Igadarma, the Gemara is going to go over the same discussion in a slightly different format. Amalei Megurashes. So here the answer is the Gershon works mid Rav Nachman v'tzidur Rishus HaRabim ka'agam dami, and as far as tzidur Rishus HaRabim is concerned, that's considered like an agam. So adarav ainu megreshes mid Rav Shmuel my love ainu Rishus HaRabim ainu tzidur Rishus HaRabim, and then this second format, the Ika d'Amre, the Gemara is now suggesting that Rishus HaRabim tzidur Rishus HaRabim are one and the same. Lo, Rishus HaRabim lechud tzidur Rishus HaRabim lechud. And this Ika d'Amre, the Gemara splits. Gemara says Rishus HaRabim is an area where you cannot make a kinyan. Again, we're not talking about where you pick it up. The item is sitting in the Rishus HaRabim. You can't make a kinyan. It's too public an area. Sidur Rishus HaRabim is a more private area, and you can make a kinyan on something which is sitting in Sidur Rishus HaRabim. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from the Mishnah.